Good morrow!
I'm Allison.
And I'm Beverly.
Welcome back to
Shaky Understanding.
We are continuing our adventures with Henry VI with part 2.
Allison is going to take over the summary on this one, so go ahead with some Shakespeare abridged.
Whew! We begin this play a little bit later after we left off of Henry VI part 1. Henry VI part 2 begins with Henry entering the court with some various lords. Suffolk has come back from France with Margaret, and he presents Margaret to the queen and is like, hey, this is going to be your new wife. I think you should marry her and it will be great. He also brings with him a peace treaty from France saying, hey, we should probably sign this and stop having a war with them. And Gloucester reads the peace treaty, but he stops talking. He loses heart when he reads the part in the treaty that comes to the French saying they're going to keep the territories of Anjou and Maine in return for letting Margaret marry the king. And Gloucester is really upset at the loss of this land because Henry V won that land and it was super hard. And he's just upset that this is gonna go south. He says, we're gonna lose all of France, this is terrible, and he storms out. Beaufort, another of the lords, then speaks against Gloucester, suggesting to Buckingham and Somerset that they should just concoct a plot and get rid of him. And Salisbury and Warwick talk with York about trying to suppress the influence of Suffolk and Beaufort, because they're just these ambitious nobles, and we don't like them. So all of the lords and Henry walk out, but York is left on stage, and he speaks to himself and the audience, and saying that he is really the rightful heir to the throne, and he's upset that all of these people are upset about the loss of land in France, when really, it's his land, because he should be king, and he's the only one who should be upset about it. Those losers. So he plants a side with Warwick and Salisbury and take over the kingdom. Then Gloucester, who has arrived home, he speaks with his wife, the Duchess, and he says that he had a dream that his staff of office was broken, but the Duchess dreamed that she was about to be crowned queen. And he says, calm down, don't be too ambitious. You're already like the second most important woman in the country behind Queen Margaret, so just chillax. And then Hume enters, and the Duchess and Hume discuss her plan to hire a witch to conjure and summon some spirits to ask about the future of Henry's reign. And they go off and plot this dark magic together. Now, some petitioners show up. They've come to court to ask for Gloucester's help, but they encounter Suffolk and Margaret on the road, and they believe that Suffolk is Gloucester. So one petitioner named Peter accuses his lord of saying that York is the rightful king. And so Suffolk goes, aha, I have now a way to get York out of the picture, because if he's going around claiming he's the rightful king, we clearly don't want him in court. So Henry then enters, and he is in the middle of a discussion about who should be the regent of the English forces in France. So Gloucester quickly suggests that York be regent. But then when Peter, this commoner, starts accusing his master, Horner, saying that he heard York saying he wants to be king, he then changes his mind and Gloucester recommends Somerset. And Margaret insults Gloucester and is like, why are you still protector of the kingdom? My husband is old enough to be in charge all by himself. Get yourself out of here. And then she also talks bad about the Duchess, which is terrible. And so Gloucester says, you know how we should solve this dispute? Let's have single combat between Peter and Horner. Duh, let's have a duel. Then we go back to seeing the Duchess, and she has gotten this witch and conjurer named Bolingbroke, which is such a great name. And they summon a spirit, and they ask Margaret's questions about Henry's rule. And the spirit gives very ambiguous answers that could be interpreted in many ways and would probably make a killing as a tarot card reader in Santa Monica. Then York, Suffolk, and Somerset enter and they arrest the Duchess for practicing black magic, essentially. Then we go back to Henry and his queen and the lords, and they're off hunting, and Gloucester and Beaufort are bickering away, and then they meet this poor commoner who claims to have had his sight restored by a miracle, and it's so wonderful. And then Gloucester goes, yeah, I think that that's not real, and I can probably cure your lameness, too, by saying that you're a cheat and I'm about to arrest you for lying to the king. So, the commoner goes, you're right, my legs suddenly work, and you have performed a miracle, and runs away. Then Buckingham arrives to tell Gloucester that his wife has been arrested. Next, we see Richard speaking to Warwick and Salisbury. This is Richard York again, and he explains the whole complex family tree that makes him the rightful heir to the throne, then Henry, and essentially his argument is that he is descended from an older son than Henry is. So if you just go by order of birth, Richard of York should be king. And both the men say, you know what, you're right, and you're the true king, and we swear allegiance. The king in the north. Here we go. Now, Henry and his lords are now holding trial for the Duchess and her sorcerers, and she is banished and ordered to do penance by being led through the streets of London before departing. Gloucester gives up his staff in his office, and he's so upset that his wife's been banished, and Peter and Horner enter for their combat, and Peter thinks that he can't fight, but he actually wins, and he kills Horner because he arrived drunk, which, don't arrive drunk to a duel is the lesson there. Later, you see Gloucester waiting in the street to see the Duchess paraded through on her way to banishment, and she warns him that the lords are out to get him, and he says, no, I'm an honorable man. Everything's gonna be fine. Not a wise choice in this day and age. So he says goodbye to his wife. So Henry then holds a meeting for all of his lords outside London, and Somerset enters to report that all of the French lands have been lost, and Gloucester arrives late, and Suffolk arrests him for treason, and the lords all accuse Gloucester of wrongdoing. But Henry says he hopes Gloucester can prove his innocence because he likes him. And Gloucester says the lords have just plotted against him and they're making up all these lies, and how can he prove his innocence when everything is made up anyway? So Gloucester is taken away, and Henry mourns the fact that he can't save an innocent man like Gloucester against the plots of the lords. And he leaves, and the other lords now have to come up with a plan to kill Gloucester. Then a messenger arrives with news of rebellions in Ireland, and York, Richard of York, is sent to take care of them and given an army. Haha, bad choice. Left on stage alone again, York reveals that in this turn of events, all he lacked to take over the throne was an army, and now he has an army. So while he goes to Ireland, he hires this man named Jack Cade to raise trouble in England and say that he is a York and therefore has a true claim to the throne, just to kind of feel out how the common people would respond to this, if they want a York king or not. And if they're like, yeah, we think a York should be king and your argument makes perfect sense, then York's going to come back with his army and take over. Now, Gloucester is killed by murderers in his home because that's the plot, and you gotta get rid of the innocent guy that's gonna mess up your stuff. Henry and his lords arrive for his trial, but Suffolk announces that Gloucester has died, and Henry is super distraught, and then we have what I term an episode of CSI Warwick, where out of nowhere, Warwick is suddenly an expert on determining how a body has died. Really, truly, he looks at the body and he's like, look at all the blood in his face. If he died in his sleep, his face would be pale because all the blood would have gone to his heart. But since his face is really red, obviously somebody choked him and he was still alive and he has been murdered. So they decide that they're going to have to banish Suffolk for the murder of Gloucester. And Henry says, all right, that's what we'll do, common people. I'll give you your wish. And he orders Suffolk to leave the country. And then left on their own, Margaret and Suffolk declare their feelings for each other in a beautiful scene. And she says that she'll try and have him returned, or that she'll be banished too because she loves him. And he says he can't live without her and just wants to stay, even if he dies. And she sends him away. Meanwhile, Beaufort has taken ill, and he's raving in bed, and he dies a crazy person in bed, miserably, symbolizing his bad behavior throughout his life. Suffolk is then captured at sea and refuses to plead for his life. He says, essentially, I am a lord, and you are just, like, first mate on this random ship in the ocean. You can't kill me. So they chop off his head and prove him wrong. Then Jack Cade speaks to the commoners, as York instructed him, claiming to be the heir to the throne and promising many changes in England. He promises to honor only the workmen and not people of high class or people who can read, because if you can read, That's dangerous and stupid. And Stafford and his brother arrive with an army to convince Cade and his men to lay down their arms, but the two armies come to blows, they have this battle, and Stafford and his brother are killed, and Jack Cade drags their bodies to London. Then we go back to Margaret, and she holds Suffolk's disembodied head and mourns him, and Henry listens to all these news of Cade's attack, and he says, all right, we gotta clear out of London for a hot minute. Jack Cade arrives in London. He hunts and kills for Lord Say, who Cade accuses of ruining England with literacy. And then Cade's rabble asks Jack Cade to create some new spoken laws. Don't write them down. We can't read that. Just tell us what they are. So he destroys London until Buckingham and Clifford arrive, reminding the commoners, hey, you have a pretty nice king in Henry VI, so I think you should follow him and not this weirdo who we've never heard of before. And so all the common people go, you're right, we'll follow Henry VI instead. So Jack Cade flees. Henry forgives the common people for riding against him, but then gets word that York's army is marching in from Ireland, and York is demanding the imprisonment of Somerset because York claims that he is a traitor. Then we see Jack Cade, who's just starving in the countryside. He creeps into a garden, steals some food, eats it, and the owner of the garden, Alexander Iden, arrives, and they fight, and Alexander kills Cade, and then goes, oh, I've killed the person that the king wanted killed and said he would give a reward for killing. Let me bring this dead body to the king and get my money. York continues to march near London with his army, and Buckingham kind of rides out to meet him and says, hey, what are you doing marching to London in the castle with this whole army? That seems treasonous and suspicious. And York goes, oh, no, no, I only want Somerset imprisoned. I'm not coming to take over the throne. Not at all. I would never think of doing that. And so Buckingham goes, well, Somerset's been imprisoned. So York goes, okay, well, I guess I'll dismiss my army. Bye, guys. Then Henry enters, followed by Margaret and Somerset. And seeing that Somerset is free and not in prison, York gets so angry he accuses Henry of being a weak, unfit king. And he says, I'm the rightful heir to the throne. And Somerset orders York's arrest. And York refuses to budge and says his sons Edward and Richard and Salisbury and Warwick will speak on his behalf. And Salisbury and Warwick declare their allegiance to York. And Henry says, you know, there's nothing left to do but fight. All right, we're doing this. So Richard fights with Somerset and kills him. Then he fights with Clifford and kills him. York's army is totally winning. So Margaret urges Henry to flee back to London where he has support. And after the battle, York declares victory, but his enemy has fled. They're all back in London. So he, with Edward and Richard, Salisbury and Warwick, prepare to enter London. And that is where we leave off at the end of part two.
So we have a guest today.
I'm hungry.
We have the actual king, Henry VI.
I'm hungry and I'm tired.
Henry, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to America.
Yeah, new world.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens in this play.
So much.
Everything that was set up in the first one where it was just fighting and subterfuge is all like out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Did I use that word right? I don't know.
Correct.
Well, Your Majesty, like, you don't end up so great in the end of this. You're kind of, like, on the run.
Ugh, they're all bullies.
They're bullies?
Yes. As far back as I can remember, I've been king. I was born king.
Yeah.
I never asked for it.
Yeah, that's right. There's that whole speech, which I thought was so interesting, because I really hadn't thought of it, where he's like, I've been a king since I was 9 months old. I mean, you think about what that means for your upbringing, like, people have been nice on the surface to you your entire life. You've had servants from, like, day one.
Mm. Uncle Gloucester is sweet.
Yeah.
But everyone else just wants things, and I just want to read books and go for walks, and it's all so vexing.
It sounds really vexing. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It is.
It sounds exhausting. All these people want to just get your throne and overthrow you. You've got to fight all these wars and defend yourself all the time.
Well, that's the thing. They tell me behind closed doors that they don't mind me being king. I don't even want to be king. If they want it so much, have it. But they want me to be king, and they just want to have their little goings on and whatever they plan behind closed doors. It's, oh, gives me a headache.
Talk about the miracle scene, which is hilarious. This so random weird guy. It's so, it's like a random comic relief. I'm blind, and then I could see, and now I can walk. I got better.
Yeah, exactly. She turned me into a newt. Let's talk about the miracle scene.
Yeah, what? It's just great. It's a hilarious scene, but it's so like incongruous with the rest of the play.
I know, and I love that Gloucester's like, okay, guys, come on, guys.
This is not real.
Yeah, who is it? It's Henry, and then the Cardinal. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're both like, ooh, miracle. Like, you were quite astonished.
He had me right going.
Yeah, I could definitely read that way.
I believed him.
Yeah.
He came to me saying he couldn't see. Why won't you believe him? Mm. But he could see.
Yeah.
I saw after he said it that he could see. I saw.
So you were smart is what you want to say.
But Uncle Gloucester saw it too.
Yeah.
I really do think the Suffolk, the Somerset scene is CSI Warwick. I mean, when I was reading it, I was like, this is an episode of CSI.
Dude, that was so funny. He comes in and he's like, see right here, zoom and enhance, and then you can see
the yes! I mean, that's what happened. That's what happened.
They literally bring the bed on stage. They're like, this had to be murder.
Right. So York has a final monologue in Act 3.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he says now or never. Is that a Shakespeare quote?
Said that. I don't know if Shakespeare made it up. I would hazard a guess yes, but I saw that. I was like, oh, snap.
Snap. Who knew?
One thing I wanted to talk about is how much the women drive this play as far as plots.
Yeah.
And both unsuccessfully. Those are, like, the only plots that fail, is that Margaret wants King Henry to be a little bit more manly in her eyes and stronger and more warlike.
I'm trying to. She's terribly smart.
And she's really
smarter than me.
I would argue yes.
Yes. Very smart.
She's very pretty.
Are you in love with Margaret?
I love her so. But I fear that she doesn't love me back.
Aww.
What makes you think that?
The way she looks at me.
Aww.
When I speak to her, she gets this faraway look. Like she wants to be somewhere else, with someone else. And I understand. She came from France and we took her. But that wasn't my choice. That's everyone else. I didn't ask for this.
Again,
I just love books and birds, and I just want to read and learn. It's all so vexing.
Sounds really tough to have been born into royalty. And
the common people have no idea how hard this is.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone telling me they want this and they hate that person. Mm-hmm. What am I to do? I'm friends with all of these people.
Mm-hmm.
They're my family.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
It's too hard to make everybody get along.
I just want everyone to sit in a room and talk about their grievances with one another. Is that so hard?
Yes, it is, apparently.
Well, then that brings me to a point where Richard of York is saying that based on their ancestors, Richard is descended from an older brother ancestor than you are. So therefore, the throne is rightfully his. What do you say to that claim?
God give me strength. I'm king. That's what they tell me. I'm not going to fight it. But deep down, if he wanted it bad enough, I suppose he could be king. But no, they entrusted me with this position. It's my divine right to carry it out, and I'm going to do the best job that I can.
So
they're going to have to be okay with that.
So do you agree with the claim or not?
No. No, I don't agree with the claim.
It's hard. It's hard work being king.
Ugh.
Things are often spoke, but seldom meant. These are my favorite quotes. Are you ready?
Wait, let's talk about women more.
Okay.
Because we got sidetracked from that. Oh. I think there's more.
Margaret is so interesting in this play.
Yeah.
She has some amazing scenes, mm-hmm, and she has a scene where she's in plotting with all the lords, and then she goes to Henry and plays complete innocence.
And that it's like, is a crazy good one.
I don't know what that talk. Did you know that she was in on that plot?
I wish I hadn't. It would have been easier that way. I know that she doesn't like me. Mm. But I'm in love with her.
She helped get rid of Gloucester, for sure.
Yeah. When you found that out, did you guys talk about it? Did you have a fight?
We talked about it, but she was very firm in her stance. She said it was the best for England. Mm. And I want what's best for England. I'm king. Mm-hmm. The king always wants what's best for England. And she's very smart. And smart people should make decisions. So I said, all right, if that's what you think is best, then I'm your husband and I'll stand by you.
Nice.
Yeah.
The Duchess plot, though, I think she's not quite the smartest.
No.
She has a plot, but
she's very much like, no, this is what should be happening and you're not doing it.
She's a terrible woman.
She kind of reminds me of Lady M.
Same. They're definitely drawing parallels with the whole witch imagery. And yeah. Like, she's definitely using witchcraft.
Yeah.
Magic.
Totally.
She's a craven, ignorant fowl.
Ooh. Wow. I saw you get a little twitch in your eyebrow there. Getting passionate. And again, Gloucester just loved her. Very similar to this relationship.
Yes,
Gloucester loved her and was like, please stop, please.
He says,
you're killing me.
Witness my tears. I cannot stay to speak. Which is so gorgeous. Because we've all had that moment of, like, I can't talk because if I open my mouth, I'm going to cry. So just...
Why are you holding hands?
Because
we're moved.
Boom. Feelings.
Do you want to hold our hand too?
Yes. That's all I wanted. You didn't include me. I'm here as well. Don't look through me. Like everyone else.
I'm sorry, it's just we've never been in the presence of a king yet.
That's true.
This is our
first king.
You're welcome.
Some more quotes.
Things are often spoke but seldom meant, I think is a great quote.
So good.
Virtue is choked with foul ambition. Here's one that I want to talk about a little bit. Warwick says this to Suffolk at one point. He says, give thee thy hire and send thy soul to hell, pernicious bloodsucker of sleeping men. Is he calling him a vampire? Am I interpreting that correctly?
No, I mean...
Maybe?
Sure, but what he's talking about is he's saying he killed Gloucester in his sleep.
Oh, yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah, so he's saying, like, you coward,
you're
happy to kill people even when they're defenseless in
right.
sleep.
I just want to talk about the Margaret and Suffolk scene because it's so beautiful and so well written and just, it's an amazing scene. But also, when she and Suffolk are talking, which has another great quote, for where thou art, there is the world itself. Why is that not in wedding vows all the time? I don't know. But when they're having their whole scene together and they're kind of slowly declaring their love for each other, mm-hmm. Margaret begins to curse and kind of go a little bit crazy with him and really, you know, rail to the sky and shout and do all these things, mm-hmm. which is what we see her do in
Richard III.
And so you begin to see where she comes from and more of her story and this backstory that she is so smart. And then in Richard III, it just adds more weight to the fact that no one is listening to her. Mm-hmm. And she's this brilliant mind mm-hmm. who sees all of these things and is smart enough to spew out these hateful, hateful curses. Just that scene, man. That scene. Did you know Margaret was in love with your friend Suffolk over there?
I had an idea.
Mm.
I mean, he wooed her in the field for you, and then he married her for you at France, and then he brought her to you, and he was like, here she is!
But I'm king, and she's queen.
Yeah, that's true.
So, whatever they had, it's done.
True, true. Very much so. Yeah. Especially since he was beheaded.
That too.
And you choose not to kill him. You, over and over again in this play, show mercy. You pretty much banish everyone you can. I don't think you sentence a single person to death in the play.
They're all my family. They're true. All I have.
True.
I just wish they got along better.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Jack Cade for a moment? Because yeah. At first, I didn't realize, I guess maybe I glossed over or something, the moment when York says to him, I don't even know if it's in the text, where he's like, hey, go rile the people up and tell them that
you're going to be king. Yeah, it's not in the text.
Okay, because I did not get that at all. It's literally
like, he's in one of his monologues to the audience, he's like, and also, I made this guy pretend he was like Mortimer and blah, right. blah, blah.
So, at first, I found Jack Cade to be utterly hilarious, and I thought it was another one of these, like, miracle scenes and just this random comic relief, and then it's like, oh, snap. He's freaking sack in London he's right now. Owning. And just taking it.
I think he's both. I thought he was so interesting, especially being in a election season for us in Jack America right Donald now. Trump. No, Jack Cade isn't Donald Trump. Jack Cade is like pure libertarian, like no big government. I'll be in charge. Yeah, he's like no literacy. It's like get rid of all of these things. And the people are like, yeah, he's right. And I love his whole speech where he's like, there will be no more bad beer. Bad beer will be outlawed. It's basically like, Bud Light and Miller Lite are, like, banned forever. Dunzo. Only craft.
So listen, they say at one point to Jack Kay that they want everything to be in common, meaning the common tongue. But does that mean all the laws and everything were written in Latin or something?
Maybe, actually. I don't even think of that.
There's still a lot of text that's written in French.
Mm.
But Latin as well.
Could you speak French and Latin and all of that?
I have to. It's my kingly duties.
All right.
Les hommes boivent.
And as you might... you might even say, knowledge, the wing wherewith we fly to heaven. Beautiful.
I can say your mother is my slave girl in Latin.
Say it.
Say it. You don't drop that and then not say it in Latin. Oh, I'm ready.
I think the grammar's wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. Tu us mater es mea sanguina.
It's pretty spot on.
Oh, sorry, Tyler.
The other thing I would say, going back to seeing the progression of Margaret as a character, is Richard III doesn't look so crazy after you read this play and you see how kind of legit his claim to the throne is. Yes, he's a horrible person and murdered people to try to get his plot finished, but, I mean, Richard of York lays out a pretty compelling argument as to why he actually should be king, and it's very logical. Any thoughts on that?
We're all descended from the same person, so in theory any of us could be king.
Yeah.
But I was the one who had a crown placed on his head. If they wanted to make such a quiver about it, they should have decided it when I was born.
I'm actually with Henry on this one. Like, y'all had your chance. You knew York would have been a good leader. He was killing it on the fields. Like, he was doing great. And he's not super conniving before this.
Right.
Like, we see him in the first act, and he's very much... We even talked to him. He was talking about law and, like, doing the right thing and things like that. I mean, I'm sure, clearly he has it in him, and maybe it's genetic, because we certainly see it in Richard, where it's, like, extremely conniving.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I think York would have made a better king. Sorry.
It's all right.
It's true. But it's another very straightforward history play. All of the subplots are the plot.
Yeah. I don't think there's any modern adaptations of it, either.
No, because you can't. Yeah. I mean, besides Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to say, Gloucester is so Eddard Stark.
I know. The minute he's like, I'm an innocent, honest man, I'll be fine. You're like, you're gonna get beheaded. You're gonna die. You're already dead. You can't do that.
Your son's gonna be beheaded. You're gonna be beheaded. Everyone you love is gonna die. Oh, rough.
Too bad.
Woof. I also very much saw, in parallel to Game of Thrones, Cersei and Robert Baratheon with
Henry and Margaret. Yeah.
Real. Robert Baratheon's a little bit more knows what he's doing and, like, a fighter, for sure. But definitely the way that Cersei works on him.
Rude. Yeah.
Sorry, Your Majesty.
It's alright.
You liked books?
I do. I liked them so much that I started a college. Three colleges.
You started college?
Eton, Cambridge, and the Oxford School of Divinity.
Wow.
And you know what? Margaret actually started a college as well.
That's crazy.
She's terribly smart. Mm. Smarter than I am. Mm.
What kind of books did you like? Do you like the classics?
I love the Canterbury Tales.
Oh, yeah?
Tales of adventure and intrigue and love and romance.
Mm-hmm. It's lovely. Yeah, she founded Queen's College in Cambridge.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yep. So for our history moment today, we are going to talk about the claim that Margaret and William de la Pole, Duke of Suffolk, were lovers. And here's the real truth, guys. It's probably not real.
Huh.
Right. The remark was first made by Edward Hall, and he just simply said that Suffolk was, quote, the Queen's darling, end quote. But it was Shakespeare in the play, not people living then or even historians of the time, who gave us this huge love affair between Margaret and Suffolk. It's much more of someone choosing to take a historical moment and make it a little bit more dramatic. Like, I found out this morning, Angelica Schuyler was already married to someone else when she met Hamilton.
No!
And none of that, I mean, their friendship and probably their great love and respect for each other is real, but she was already married and didn't, you know, pawn him off to her younger sister.
There was no three things she realized at the very same time. No. There was just you should probably marry my sister.
Right. So there were some rumors that Edward of Lancaster, the son, your son, Henry, was a bastard and that Margaret was unfaithful.
Oh, snap.
But this is from a ballad that was written just by York sympathizers. So saying, hey, he's not a legit king, so we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And Pope Pius II quoted Warwick as saying that Margaret and, quote, those who defile the king's chamber, end quote, had taken over the government. So they started this rumor, and it went pretty far, but it's probably not real because they never actually named any names. So while they said, oh yeah, he's a bastard, they weren't like, and Jon Snow's the father. They were just like, he's a bastard. It's not real. Because reasons, we think that we're right. So, haha. But they never actually had any proof or even went far enough to create some story at the time.
I like that you chose a bastard as the father.
You know,
I
did.
Situation.
I did.
I liked it.
So when she came to England with Suffolk, he was really her only friend, he and his wife. So, of course,
right.
It's only logical that they remained close.
That makes sense.
And she supported his policy and his views because they did spend a lot of time together. And because she was French, she was pretty unpopular in the country from the start. So, again, it does just bring her closer to Suffolk as a friend. And she was, just as a person, very commanding, very smart, and she was pretty much always your opposite, Henry. You're just a very gentle, nice king, and she was like, this is what we're gonna do, and we're gonna get it done.
Thank you.
Not sure that was a compliment, but you're welcome.
I'll take it as one.
She did support a lot of your founding of colleges, though, and your educational schemes, which is how she came to found Queen's College in Cambridge. Then there were some rumors that she maybe had an affair with the Duke of Somerset or Beaufort or all of these other things. And some have said that Edmund was maybe suspected of being the father of Margaret's child, but there's no contemporary source. Again, Edward Hall was writing when Somerset was arrested in 1543 that he was in Margaret's great chamber. And if we assume that that account is correct, then it's notable to say that he was not being said to be in her bed chamber.
Mm.
So Margaret is probably true and faithful to her king while potentially thinking behind your back that you're a bit of an idiot. And it's all just rumors.
Shakespeare often does that where he is trying to make the current monarchy look the best.
Right.
And making Margaret look disfaithful to King Henry VI would make the current monarchy
right.
look the best.
Exactly.
My friend Chris showed me this great video comparing the War of the Roses to Game of Thrones and really walking you through what happened step by step. And I'll post it to the Facebook page and I'll put a link in the podcast description.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it, especially if you're like me and history's real hard for you, but you love fake history, like Game of Thrones. And yeah, they brought up such good points and it's just beautiful.
One of the many interesting things in that video, but one of the most interesting to me, was William the Conqueror, 1066, and the fact that there's a direct line from him to the current Queen Elizabeth, and that in 2066, it will be 1,000 years of his ruling. Holy smokes!
That's cray. That's cray cray banay-nay.
Real.
So this is the scene where the three conspirators have bonded together. Margaret, Suffolk, and
the cardinal
have conspired to kill Gloucester. And so King Henry thinks that Gloucester is just in the prison, and this is when he asks him to bring Gloucester out so that they can do a trial.
Go, call our uncle to our presence straight. Say we intend to try his grace today. If he be guilty as 'tis published,
I'll call him presently, my noble lord.
Lords, take your places, and I pray you all, proceed no straighter gainst our uncle Gloucester than from true evidence of good esteem he be approved and practice culpable.
God forbid any malice should prevail that faultless may condemn a nobleman. Pray God he may quit him of suspicion.
I thank thee, Meg. These words content me much. How now? Why lookest thou pale? Why tremblest thou? Where is our uncle? What's the matter, Suffolk?
Dead in his bed, my lord. Gloucester is dead.
Mary, God forfend!
God's secret judgment. I did dream tonight the Duke was dumb and could not speak a word.
Oh, how fares my lord? Help, lords, the king is dead!
Bear up his body, bring him by the nose.
Ron, go, help, help, oh Henry, ope thine eyes!
He doth revive again, madam. Be patient.
Oh, heavenly God!
How fares my gracious lord?
Comfort, my sovereign. Gracious Henry, comfort.
What? Doth my lord of Suffolk comfort me? Come he right now to sing a raven's note, whose dismal tune bereft my vital powers? And thinks he that the chirping of a wren, by crying comfort from a hollow breast, can chase away the first conceived sound? Hide not thy poison with such sugared words. Lay not thy hands on me. Forbear, I say, that touch affrights me as a serpent's sting. Thou baleful messenger, out of my sight. Upon thy eyeballs, murderous tyranny sits in grim majesty to fright the world. Look not upon me, for thine eyes are wounded. Yet do not go away. Come, basilisk, and kill the innocent gazer with thy sight. For in the shade of death I shall find joy, in life but double death, now Gloucester's dead.
And see. Thanks for listening, guys.
Wow. We'll have our conclusion soon. Very exciting.
Get ready for part 3, Return of the King.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Deuces, peasants!
Bud Light, Miller Light are, like, banned forever.
Dunzo.
Only craft. I'm talking Firestone. I'm talking Stone. I'm talking Ballast Point.
Are those your ideas of craft beer?
That was what came to mind. I messed up.
Firestone and Stone.
Stone's really good.
Listen.
Not Ballast Point.
Ballast Point's really good.
Not Angel City.
Angel City!
Demoted.
What other craft beers are you drinking? Blue Moon.
Winner.
Their seasonal flavors are really good.
Christ on a crutch.